Welcome to, what is this, episode 8, 9? I can't keep track. I think it's 8. We're very new. The Space Game Junkie Podcast. The theme this week, our space games just a dot. I'll tell you why. Because we have a guest on this week, but besides my awesome co-host, Jim. Hi, Jim. Jim?
Hello.
Hi, thank you.
He's alive, thank God.
Woo!
It turned into like a Weekend at Bernie's thing.
We have a guest.
Sorry, I was checking out this cool picture of a horse that Brian put on the website.
It is an awesome horse. It's a powerful horse. How would you like me to say your name? Sean, Curtis? How do you want to...
Sean is fine. Okay. Sean Andridge.
From the awesome site Gamers with Jobs, which I'm sure many of you know. And if you don't, just go there because it's great. It's a very mature, friendly community. They have a podcast. How many episodes have you done now? 3,382,000?
340-something? We do keep track technically, but I don't really mentally register the number every time I post a new show. It just sort of happens.
God bless you. That's fabulous.
339. That's how many.
Wow. Congratulations. Well, I wanted to bring you on because several weeks ago, I've been catching up on the podcast. You said space games are basically just chasing a dot, and I've never heard them described that way before. I'll be honest. I mean, I've heard people have told me, yeah, it's just not my thing, not into it. It seems silly, all the pew pew. Okay. That I get, you know, that I understand. The dot.
Yeah.
That kind of stuck with me because it was like, wait a minute, what? And then I thought about it. I'm like, okay, that could be true. But can't you do that with just about any game?
Yeah. Oh, I think so. And honestly, any genre that you look at, you can get really reductive about anything, right? You could say a first person shooter is just point and click. You know, it's right. Just, you know, like, it's a gun in front of you and you just point and you.
Doom is a game about chasing keys. You know, I mean, that can.
In Mario, you just jump from platform to platform. I mean, there's a turtle sometimes. Like,
Skyrim, you follow a compass heading from one quest to the
other. Well, you know, to be fair, you do that a lot in Skyrim. So, no, it's easy to be. It's easy to be really reductive, and you know, when I say chasing a dot, you know, I'm kind of being flip, but I'm also being kind of honest too, because my experience with space games there was a time in my youth where I really did play them and enjoy them, and then there got to be a point where I was noticing that, you know, you had your reticle, and then they'd give you the little lead dot off to the side of your reticle once you've targeted an enemy ship, and you'd say, you know, like, if you shoot here, you'll hit the enemy ship, you know. I really liked that innovation just in the sense of it made it easier for a Luddite like myself to kind of get my head around how much I'm supposed to lead my shots against enemies. But the thing I've always struggled with is that ultimately, like in a big fur ball of a fight in space, I feel like I'm chasing that dot. And when I kill him, I'm like, great. Now I'm just going to fly in a quick circle, find the next target, hit my E key or whatever it was, and then now I'm going to chase that dot and shoot at that dot till it dies and rinse, wash, repeat. The challenge I've always had with space combat games is a sense of place within the space, like a sense of like my ship being somewhere and like what's going on around me and being reactive and maneuvering. Like when I play a World War II flight sim game or like War Thunder, my sense of place is a lot firmer, and that it may even be because there's ground below me, you know.
Yeah,
but
probably, yeah.
But in a space game, I've always struggled with that. So I'm being flippant when I say I'm chasing a dot, and that's what it feels like. To illustrate a point, I mean, obviously that's not the truth about playing a space game. At least I hope not. I'm kind of here. This is a mission of mercy. Like I need help. Like I need help understanding how to enjoy these games in a way that's meaningful.
Well, that's a great way to come to it. Now, what game do you think you started noticing this? When do you think did you start noticing this change in the way you either in the way the games reacted toward you or the way you reacted toward the games?
I want to say Freelancer or around that time.
Late in the cycle, basically.
I would say so. You know, I've always been casually interested in the genre. There's some definitely some older games I can remember playing even back in junior high that I liked. But I think Freelancer was kind of around the time. Was Freelancer the one where they were kind of making a big deal out of the fact you could play with a mouse?
Yes.
Or was that after?
The thing about Freelancer is people call it a space sim, but it's more like an action RPG where your character just happens to be a ship.
Okay.
And you basically actually have a mana potion and a health potion, but they're basically like shield batteries and nanobots.
Mm-hmm.
So that
it is space Diablo.
It really is. It really is.
But not as good as Drox Operative.
That's really
space Diablo.
It is.
And you know, I've played it. And that was another game. Like that game, I'm not a big fan. Now, to be fair, I only played, I think, kind of mid-late beta. I don't think I've played it since it really came out and it's had some patches and stuff. I just found Drox to be kind of dull a little bit. Like, I really kind of struggled to find the fun.
It does have a slow start game because unlike, Din's Curse, for example, or other Diablo clones where you actually have a map with rooms and corridors, the map is just a big open thing and you got to fly around and find these things in it. And yeah, that's the problem with that game when I try and sell it to people, because the early game is just, it can be a real struggle for folks to just really click with it. You got to really get into the dynamics of it, but you can't do that until you start finding other races and finding other planets, and that takes a while.
Yeah, my experience playing Drox was just like, nobody likes me. Like, nobody ever likes me. Like, I can't make anybody like me. And eventually I just kind of take the hint and stopped. But I think that's really how it ended.
You just got to do their quests, man. You got to colonize their planets for them, and you have to kill these monsters for them, and you know, do these little things for them. You know, just massage them a little bit. But I could see the problem is space games, a lot of space games since Freelancer have kind of adopted that model. There have been a lot of mediocre mouse-based space games since then that have adopted that kind of mouse lead model. Like I don't know if you played Strike Suit Zero, but it's an excellent example of this.
Yeah, and that's actually, I didn't even bother with it, and for that reason, because the way it was described, it sounded very samey. And it also sounded like when you went into robot mode, it got kind of lame, too.
It was surprising, because robot mode was supposed to be this awesome thing, but in robot mode, you basically turn into a turret, and they don't really explain that to you. When you turn into a turret, you're like, wait, I'm not moving. Oh God, what do I do? And then you turn back into a fighter. Wait, what just happened? I have no idea. I'm lost. Oh God, I'm flying again. Yeah, that game had so much potential and really just kind of blew it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe this will give a little context. The last space sim, or not sim, but the last space shooty game I've played was Dark Star 1, which, you know,
kind of boring.
Given what they were,
kind of bland.
You know, it seemed very typical, and given the kind of game they're kind of trying to do, it was pretty light on the RPG stuff, pretty kind of wonky on the story, and again, the combat was very much felt like, target one enemy, shoot him down, target the next one. Like, I've had that issue with flight sims as well, like ones that are based on, you know, modern times or World War II or whatever. But it, again, like, even if it's just, maybe it's just a question of theme, because in a flight sim, I enjoy that more. Like I enjoy, like, going from target to target. I don't mind doing those loops and those circles and looking for the next target and stuff. But when I'm in a space game, it just feels so empty and it just feels like a big turkey shoot. Like, I just can't seem to really get around it. Like, what is the modern space game that actually feels tactical?
Now, do you mean
the thing?
Go ahead.
That's the thing where we end up liking a game like TIE Fighter so much, because TIE Fighter, the missions are structured in such a way that the objectives are known up front, right? We're going here, there's going to be these ships, and we're going to destroy this thing, and that's the mission. And here's your primary and secondary goals, right? And then you just get into it. As opposed to these games where the story kind of develops as the mission goes, right? Which what was the game you were just talking about?
Strike Suit Zero.
Yeah, Strike Suit Zero. Where that one is just kind of like, do you want to start this mission? And all you know is the title of the mission.
Yeah, Soul Exodus from last year, sadly, which was kind of a fun one, it did the same exact thing. It kind of threw the missions at you. And rather than make up, rather than like have a good structured mission, it just throws tons and tons of enemies at you. So you're in this big fur ball, but you don't really feel like you're making a huge difference.
Yeah, and it's tough to prioritize what your current objective should be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a thing where, like we talked last week, that the TIE Fighter and X-Wing games are kind of puzzly, but the puzzly part is all about target prioritization.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you play it a little bit and then you develop a feel for that.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of modern games kind of blow it, is that they don't really have it's like kill a bunch of same things. Yeah, very exactly. Fast.
Like I wish they were modeling Free Space more than Freelancer, to be honest with you, because Free Space gave you a much better sense of place. It gave you a much better sense of pace. You know, you had these big capital ships, or you had a nebula, or you had, you know, this big gate, you know, you had to protect, or all this other stuff. And it just felt, maybe structure is the problem.
What was Free Space or Free Space 2? Like, to your mind, what was the last great space sim?
Free Space 2, to me, is still the pinnacle of the genre. I mean, the last really good AAA space sim was probably Independence War 2. In 2001-ish, 2002-ish. That was the last. But even that one was overtly puzzly. Even I didn't click with that one, honestly.
Yeah, I have trouble finding a point of entry to that thing.
Yeah, that's what's crazy to me is that, you know, and that's over a decade ago. Mm-hmm. You know, like we've had our resurgence in all these different games. I mean, Lord knows we have so many isometric RPGs that have been kickstarted mm-hmm. in the last 12 months. Like, it's mm-hmm. nuts. And yet, and on the space genre, like, it's just there's a lot of stuff, but what I'm seeing is a lot of either really simple shooting, really simple trade mechanics, really light story. You know, I don't necessarily need my space sims to have people in cat suits in order for the story to seem really great. you know, like that, you know, like they were with Wing Commander, but you know, I need something a little crunchier and something that feels a little more rewarding and diverse.
That's
you know,
why
like
a lot,
that, that's, Yeah.
That's why a lot of people are excited about Star Citizen, because it looks like it's going to try and recapture that kind of space sim, that kind of privateer, Wing Commander style, structure, but also openness, close-up type combat. It's very, that's why a lot of us are, that's the Kickstarter I've given the most money to, for example.
Sure, yeah.
Well, I'm finding that as time goes by, as I get older and maybe more jaded toward, gameplay tropes and that I found myself doing this not only with BioShock Infinite, because I want to see the game, but I don't so much want to be annoyed with the combat stuff. So it's kind of like, okay, the combat is representative of the experience, so I have to have some in there, you know, with a little bit of difficulty, but I don't really want to repeat sections, and you know, I just want to get through it and see the narrative. And then if I'm inspired and I want to come back through and have a good combat time, then I'll replay it on a higher difficulty. And the same deal with Mass Effect 3, because I'm starting Mass Effect 3 because they finally have all the DLC out. So it's like, well, you have to replay the thing. So I was like, I don't know, 3/4 of the way through the first time, and I abandoned that save. And it's like, all right, I'm going to start from the beginning again. Mm. But this time, I don't want to grind through all this combat, so I set it down to the narrative level. And it's like, you know what? One bullet in the head kills somebody. Hey, I don't really have a problem with that. That's kind of how
it's actually kind of realistic. I mean, sure, it doesn't count if they shoot me, but that's okay.
That's fine. So, and they're like, warning is not representative of the experience. I'm like, BS, let's go. I'm the space commando, right? So that's fine. And I'm kind of, you know, if I hit some place where I feel like, no, this should be more difficult, then fine. But since I'm like rehashing the content that I've already been through, I don't feel bad about it in the least. So I'm becoming more of a narrative person than I am about the actual gameplay. You know, it's like if I don't need a story and I just want repetitive difficulty, I'll play Pac-Man.
Right. So does that hold true then for a space sim for you? Like when you look at the X series, right? That's always seemed inscrutable to me.
Yeah. No, to me, well, the X games are business sims where your office is a spaceship. That's how that's how I look at them. Because every time I play them, I feel like, okay, yeah, they're kind of missions, but I feel like you really want me to start a business, and that's not why I'm here.
Yeah, you don't want to sense like I should have like a nice oak desk on my, you know, on my on board my ship.
Have a tandem cockpit with the secretary in front of you, you know, like in a patch.
Filling out my TPS reports. Yeah, exactly.
God.
Because you know, and then on like when I'm, and this is kind of like I'm a bit of an outside observer. I mean, I do a weekly gaming podcast. I do play a lot of stuff, but on the space sim side of things, you know, I don't go hunting for it as much. I don't have quite that nostalgia for them like I do with other genres. But my sense is that right now you've either got fairly simple kind of delivery action games that are like, what was the game on the iPad? They've had two versions now.
Galaxy on Fire?
Galaxy on Fire, then Galaxy on Fire 2, and then they made a PC.
Very similar to Freelancer. Yes, very similar.
Yeah, and then they made a PC port, which, again, I didn't touch because I'm like, if it works on an iPad, you know what? It's probably not crunchy enough for me to really take a lot of interest in it. I'll just feel like I'm chasing the dot again. And then, so it's either that, or then you've got these space games, and it's like, well, it's randomly generated, and we've just randomly generated all of space and planets and people and... You know, you'll be attacked randomly by pirates, which sounds great on paper, but it's like you guys talk about with a more directed narrative or like a more directed mission structure. I don't get stuck on narrative, but mission structure, like TIE Fighter, like, you know, like the X-Wing game.
Are you okay with opener, more open games? Because I just thought of one you might enjoy.
I am. You know, I don't know if I necessarily want to read a 200-page manual.
No.
If it feels like Dwarf Fortress, I'll probably run screen.
No, this game is called Dangerous, actually. And it does it was a tablet game, but they ported it to the PC. But it does a very good job of creating what feels at least like a living universe. Like, when you're in a system, you can get all these alerts about someone's being attacked or someone needs help, and you can do these little dynamic side missions, or you can take missions from your base, or you could follow the quest.
Yeah.
Main quest.
Okay.
And the controls are pretty simple, and there's a lot to do. And I must have put about 8 or 10 hours in it, and I never felt bored like once.
Yeah. It looks pretty simple graphically.
Graphically. The guy is about to update it though with like a boarding edition where you can like jump into ships and take over. So that's kind of cool, I think.
That's a neat idea. And I like, you know, I like the idea of a living universe. Just like when I play an Elder Scrolls game, I like the idea of a universe that lives. And then the actual experience sometimes can come off feeling very generic. I will say on the Dangerous webpage here, which is whoisdangerous.com, on the right-hand side where it says epic story, it's a picture of a woman's naked back.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that makes for an epic story, but that's an interesting way to go about it.
Basically, the story I've seen so far is you committed this horrible genocidal crime, and they change your name to Dangerous so everyone will know how awful you are, and then you wake up 100 years in the future. Yeah, it's a ridiculous story, totally ridiculous, but it just kind of moves things forward in the point that, oh, now I'm ready for this plot. It's kind of like Freelancer-esque in that way, where like you do a bunch of side quests, and then you're ready for this next main plot mission, you know, once you build up enough money in a bigger ship. And the combat's pretty fun. It's pretty simple to play. It really does scratch that itch pretty well. And that's probably where the best of this stuff is in the indie section.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of the love is too. And because totally. It's like, well, I can't make a AAA space game.
Exactly.
Unless maybe I'm Chris Roberts and I kickstart something, but even that won't be AAA by the, you know, the raw definition of what that usually means, which is a 100-person team and, you know, $40 million. But, you know, like, I guess one of the things I'm looking for in a space sim, is a game where I feel like my ship has weight. Where there's a sense of physics and, well, I hate to say gravity, but there's a sense of like weight and maneuverability, something that makes it feel like, because it feels like any ship can kind of go in circles and shoot at things, right? Like that's always been one of the things I've sort of struggled in finding.
The Evacron games do kind of offer that. The ships feel pretty. That's kind of a one man team. That guy's been making space sims for at least a decade. The Evacron games are these kind of open worldy games where you can do things like you can clean shit. I mean, you can actually get a mission where you can go clean satellites. That's one of the mission types.
Wow.
And, I know.
Space
and you can,
janitor.
Yeah, but you could do races and you can clean up trash and you could do bounties and all that kind of stuff. But it's got a mix.
If EVE Online had jobs like that, boy,
yeah,
that would
maybe
be
I'd
fun.
Actually play that spreadsheet in space thing.
So you guys don't have any desire to play EVE Online? Just
I've played it. I've played it on and off a couple of times, and it's like I jump into it. Oh, it's kind of fun. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I have a job that pays me. I don't need to do this.
What I found was because I was playing with a guy that I work with, and you know, whenever I first started there, and he was like, oh, yeah, we're gamers, and, you know, EVE Online. And there's a lot of people in the company that play. And I thought, well, this is really cool. And I'm off Monday through Thursday because I work the weekend. So I'm like, yeah, that's pretty neat. I'll come and play. And what I found is, like, it was a game that I couldn't play anything else.
You know,
because especially we were in a corporation, so it's not like you're in there just screwing around. And they're heavy PvP, right? So then it would be like I get a text on the phone like, dude, you got to get in here because we got a, you know, this going on, and there's like battleships coming in, and yeah, you know, and it's like all hands.
And it's great, dude, for people who love that stuff. I mean, there's something to be said for that sandbox universe that they've created.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive. But I've always said I have more fun reading about EVE Online than I actually have ever had playing EVE Online.
I look at it like I do with Dwarf Fortress. It's kind of the same idea. It's just like, I love the stories, but every time I try and actually delve into it myself, it's like, oh, okay, well, to get to the experience that leads to the great story, I'm going to have to devote about 40 hours of my life.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, so not necessarily space games at all, but what are your great games?
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Three games. You're going to be locked in a box for the rest of your life, and you get to take three.
Well, see, that's such a leading question, because that actually would dictate a game that where there is some randomness. Because at that point, I'd say like a Civ 4, right? Like, I mean, something that's has a lot of replay value.
Okay, all right. Well, let me change it then. If you could go back and re-experience the first time that you ever played
a particular game. Good one. Good.
Now we're talking. The original XCOM, for sure. That is a game that is very near and dear to my heart. Beyond that, perhaps Half-Life. Half-Life, at the time it came out when I was 18, was an incredibly meaningful game for me. Like that was a game where that was the kind of the game that made me realize, like, oh, games can do more than just Doom or Quake. Like, games can actually be more than just that.
Right.
At least an FPS kind of game. So I'd say that's definitely up there. Take a real left turn. I'd say like The Longest Journey. That was like one of the first games I really loved just for its narrative and for its story. Way above and beyond its gameplay and solving puzzles, which I'm terrible at. Like, The Longest Journey just told a great story, and there's very few games I'd played that actually managed that before.
Wow.
So now take those three things and tell me what space game I should play.
Have you played TIE Fighter? I mean, you just mentioned it, but did you play that one?
TIE Fighter was out, I want to say, when I was in grade 8. Like, when I was in junior, like, I don't think I had a computer that could run it. And if I did, I didn't have the money to buy it. So I don't think, like, I think I've played it, but I don't think I've owned it and, like, played it for days on end or anything like that.
It's still.
I have a zip file you can unpack and be ready to go. So we'll hook you up.
That's the question, though. Is that a game that holds up?
It does. I'm playing through it right now for the blog. I'm doing a bunch of Let's Play videos. And sure, the graphics aren't the greatest. It's 94. You have Garrard shading, and it's limited to 640 by 480. And the combat and the story, and one thing you might like about it, you were talking about that lead indicator. It doesn't have that. It basically, the reticle turns green when you're supposed to make a shot. It doesn't have a lead indicator. So,
but it kind of amounts to the same thing.
It kind of does. But
you go fight like some A-Wings, and then you come back and talk to us about that.
Oh, God, A-Wings.
I wouldn't want to get hung up on this idea that, like, a lead indicator is inherently bad.
No, right? I think this is before they started doing that regularly. And I think it did maybe take a little bit away from the challenge. So I know where you're coming from.
You know, it's kind of the same problem I find with a lot of MMOs, especially these days. You know, as we see, like, we've watched MMOs evolve over the last 14 years or so, where, you know, every successful MMO has basically been approaching the genre with an eye to reducing tedium and creating more simplicity and getting to what you consider the good bits of it, right? Like, if I play a game called Age of Wushu, which just came out, and I don't even like the MMO genre that much at this point, but I have to try each one because I keep hoping it's going to, you know, suddenly be interesting to me again. But in Age of Wushu, when you get a quest, like, you look at your quest text, it'll say, you need to go talk to this person. They'll highlight that person's name. If you click on that name, your character will automatically run to that NPC.
That's a great idea.
And if it says you need to go here, you click on that, it'll automatically run you to where you need to go. Because you're going to see it on the map anyway. So we might as well just take the tedium of holding down your mouse button, holding down the up arrow. And we'll just run you there, and then you can just press some attack buttons when you get there, and then you're good. You know, like, and that's basically all it is, you know. And you can hit F9 and make every player on the screen disappear.
Oh, wow.
You know, just so lots of stuff. Like, you know.
Yeah, because, a lot of people don't remember back. Oh, God, what was it, 7 years ago when World of Warcraft was new? It was like there was EverQuest, and then there was World of Warcraft. And World of Warcraft was such an evolution of reducing tedium. Like, corpse runs were gone. Oh, my God. And
what's a corpse run?
If you get killed in EverQuest, the original, your your body lays there with all of your equipment, and you reappear naked back at the nearest town.
Oh,
well,
no.
Not necessarily the nearest town, but the last town that you kissed the Blarney Stone, right? So
yeah, exactly.
Then you have to actually, and your character, your equipment on your corpse will begin to decay. There's a counter that starts running as soon as you die.
Oh, no.
So you might be in the most inaccessible, shitty place in the game, right?
Oh, no.
Like lava storm. And you have to make the run naked from the town back to where your group is, and then everybody has to like fight back in so that you can loot your corpse. And it's just like, and you never, once you were good at the game, you never died in a pleasant place, you know?
So, that sounds,
and no, God forbid like, there
or
be a party.
You died, you died en route to somewhere that was safe. Like you died in, you know, you're on a field. There's happened to be a hill giant who just happened to come across and just squash you. Or you fell off a mountain and you fell into a place that's, you know, 20 levels above you. So that decay rate also means that like, I want to say the decay was maybe 24, 48 hours. Like it was a long window that your corpse would lay there. But if you couldn't get to your body, then you had to find a necromancer who had to spend some fairly expensive resources to summon your corpse, which was possible, but not easy.
Well, can you, if you remember, you couldn't even find your corpse when you died. You had to find a necromancer to locate your corpse, because if you were in
a place
entirely familiar with where you died. And I remember one night in Carena running around the whole zone, right, with griffins chasing us. And I'm like, oh, my God, where's my corpse? And what it was is when I died like the game glitched me up into a tree.
Yeah.
And we couldn't find the damn corpse. So finally I had to get a GM to intervene and like yank my corpse out of this tree.
That sounds,
the game was a nightmare.
That sounds almost as bad as that Kinect Star Wars video you made me watch last week. That sounds almost as bad as that.
Do the trash compactor. but the thing about it though is World of Warcraft came out and it took all that BS away, right? And people were just like, "Oh my God, this is the best." But they opened the, I think the genius of World of Warcraft and the reason that game is still around is because they opened the user experience to the end users and everybody could mod the thing. So then you end up with, like we were talking about, you know, the game's going toward easy mode, right? The community of World of Warcraft actually drove that because they said, hey, you know, it's going to be on the map anyway, or I got to find this guy with the quest. Let me put like a GPS arrow on the screen that points me to the next guy, right?
Right.
And that kind of thing. And now it's to the point where you have maps that, oh, I'm looking for this monster. Well, you click on the quest and it's like, oh, it drops off this monster and you open the map and it's got regions of the map that are colored for where the monsters spawn. So you can go directly to it, right? So at that point, the game is no longer like, do I know the layout of the landscape? How much of the workings of this game do I understand? It's more like, can I just follow an arrow and kill stuff, right?
That's kind of why I still think Free Space 2 is still the best in the business, because it gives you all the same tools. Like, here's your escort list. These are the ships you have to pay attention to. And keep an eye on those, and here's what you have to do to finish this mission. But it just makes everything so accessible.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm drawn toward, right? Like you're talking about like that EverQuest experience and how it's laughable. Like there are parts of EverQuest that are laughable at this point, but there's so much to EverQuest that is so memorable because it was so difficult.
Isn't it still running?
It's still there. They finally free played it.
Yeah, and they're like the original EverQuest is free to play. Because I know EverQuest 2 is. I don't know if EverQuest 1.
They finally got around it.
Like within the last year. And like they've been releasing expansions right up till present day. So it's got legs. In fact, there are pirated EverQuest servers. You could play the original EverQuest experience. There are servers that are running it.
It doesn't sound like I'd want to. Brian, check this out.
It's
an anachronism.
So you know mana in a game, right? When you're a wizard. And it takes a while. You have to like sit and meditate to get your spell points back, right?
What?
So the original EverQuest, So the original EverQuest, they didn't have potions. There was no such thing as a potion to get your mana back.
What?
You had to park your ass on the ground and wait. But what's worse than that is you don't regenerate spell points unless you're staring at your spell book, which takes away your view of the game. The spellbook interface takes over the entire screen,
what?
And then you have the chat window down at the bottom. So you talk to your friends like, "Is there anything going on?" Because your head down.
Yeah,
in the
well, you'd like you'd be like, yeah, and you'd be playing
and
like,
not for
eight
not
hours.
For 5 minutes either. You'll meditate for gosh, I was up to the point where I was meditating like 40 minutes to get like a full bar back.
I called that go get a sandwich and read a book time. It's basically what it was.
Like
I
played your character was doing, read a book. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was just like that. So the crazy thing is you think about EverQuest and where it was at that point in time, which was around 1998 or so, that's when space sims kind of stopped, right? Mm. So since EverQuest, we've had, you know, about 13 years of evolution in the MMO genre, and there's a lot of MMOs, but, you know, there's a pretty decent amount of variation. You know, you have your EVE, you have your WoW clones, EverQuest clones, you've got everything in between. We've had all of this innovation and everything and all these changes that have made for a better player experience. And then in Space Sims, it just stopped.
It did, because...
And so, yeah, and now what we've got is people making Space Sims now are like, wow, we're getting back to the old school. We're hitting the nostalgia bone. And so there's not... I don't feel like Space Sims have really hit a point where the design is getting back to actually building on top of the shoulders of what came before and building something that feels fresh and new. It's right now, it seems to be more about recapturing the old with better graphics.
A little bit. I mean, that's what some of the, at least, that's what some of the recently released Sims have been trying to do. But there are a few coming out that I think are trying to do their own thing. Like, have you heard of Limit Theory? It got kickstarted a little while back. It's a one-man project. That looks like a fascinating procedurally generated space game. There's a couple others. Oh, God, what are their names?
There's a bunch. I mean, Chris Roberts. I think, like, I backed the Chris Roberts game. Like, I actually backed it. Because
good for you. Thank you.
Well, that is just something that it just kind of captured my imagination a bit. Because I do, especially these days with the graphics, you know, the way computers are now, like, you know, spaces in it is just this whole, the genre, that area is just so, like, you could do so much with it.
You could.
You know, like, you could actually, like, have planets with actual topography that, you know, you could actually, you know, burst through the stratosphere, the atmosphere of a planet.
You can already do that in a game called, I think I mentioned it, Evercron. You could fly down to planets and fly around.
Straight out of space?
Like, yeah, no straight lows, out of space. Like, no, you gotta get the angle right, but yeah, you can fly straight down. But then you can actually, you know, they just added a thing where you can actually, like, get out and walk around in a mech, which I haven't done yet. But
oh, neat.
Yeah, so that's the latest one.
So the next question is, can you do anything once you've done that? Like, is there a reason to, or is it just cool?
I don't remember because I haven't tried it yet. I haven't gotten around to actually trying it. I mean, you can land on planets, you can. There are cities on planets where you can do trade and get missions and stuff like that, just like space stations. They're kind of abstracted, though. They're not like these big, massive planets where you could take an hour to fly around, like in Elite 2 or whatever. They're abstracted.
Well, everything has to be a little bit abstract. Yeah. You know, like otherwise it's like, well, you know, then you're back to EverQuest. It's like, it's your spell book. Well, put it on autopilot and go make a sandwich. It's going to take a while to get to the next asteroid, you know?
The thing that I'm looking at in gaming right now, that is, there's the whole indie movement that's going on, where you can have a small developer actually experiment with a new idea, because for the longest time it was like, well, we have these big budget games from big studios with giant, like, EA, you know, mega corporations that back them. Therefore, our investors are only going to back RTS games and FPS games, because those are the guaranteed money, you know, back in the day when even FPS
back in the day,
yeah. So, but that was kind of the, whenever all the creativity got sucked out, because it was, everybody was making an also ran kind of game. And at that point it was like, you were either a AAA title or unnoticed kind of thing. But what I think has changed hugely, and I would give props to Notch for changing the way that development works, because he was the first guy really that was just like, hey, yeah, we're building this game. You can buy in while it's in alpha and beta, you know, but you get a reasonable experience, and I'm going to sell it myself on my own website, and it's just a cute little sandbox, right? But Minecraft has become like this crazy game that, you know, what they've made. And what I keep wondering is, I look at games that are online like Second Life, where they had this economy, and the whole buzz behind Second Life was, hey, we're going to have this game and we're going to have real world money change hands in it, and things that you build and other players can do. So we're going to bring the creative people in here, and, you know, you can just make anything. This is your playground. But I've been in Second Life quite a bit, and I think that it's kind of tough to make things in there. It's not as accessible as if you look at the projects that people do in Minecraft, where somebody will get in there and build like a one-to-one scale Starship Enterprise, right? And it's just like one guy cranking this thing out. I'm kind of looking for something that meets in the middle ground, right? I think especially like with Oculus Rift coming along, you know, we've got the head-mounted displays finally that are going to be worth having.
I'm very excited about that.
And I think it is time. It is time for William Gibson's version of cyberspace. Please, please. But we need the tools to do it. And I think that something more like the Minecraft user experience and ease of building is a heck of a lot better than going in and trying to make like some kind of clunky in-game CAD interface like what they do with primitives in Second Life. So, yeah, and I just think like if everybody that's running the game had a little bit of server space of their own, it's like I could build a world on my computer, be it in space, be it, you know, whichever. But let's take it like a space game. Like I design my own star system and it runs in my computer, right? And then whenever people come through the warp gate, when I open it, like, I'm open for business. You know, I'm on the map.
I think
tonight.
Star Citizen is going to let you do that. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, see, that would be cool to have a community of inter-networked people because everybody's on broadband now. Yeah. We can handle
I mean, I don't think you'd be able to fly from, like, the official Star Citizen universe to your little universe, but I think they are going to be supporting mod-enabled player servers as well.
But I want the player servers to be interconnected.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
Saying. You know, let's say we'll have like a confederation of 20 or 40 or 100 player servers.
They're not connected in Minecraft though either. The player servers.
I know. I'm talking. This is the next level. The next thing that I want is let's have Minecraft servers where I can step through a door and I walk from my server to your server, and have a little bit of continuity between them. Because really, what are you doing in Minecraft? I can play all day in single player. Nobody can come see this whiz-bang giant castle thing that I
well,
made,
what if that
right?
next server I walk through the door to is run by a jerk? What happens?
And how would they inform each other? In. Like, that's the big question to me. Like, kind of what you're describing to some degree sounds a little bit like what they're trying to do right now with SimCity, you know, where you've got a bigger land mass and everybody's got their own city. And they're all interconnected, but they're all independent. You know, like, I
well, how do I interact with people that are my neighbors, though?
Right. That's what I mean, right? They do kind of, there are roads, you know, dump trucks and various little things can go over to your neighbors and help them out, at least assuming the game works at some point. you know, like, cause that's the thing, like, to me, interconnected servers aren't really enough if it's just as good to have a server list and I just log in, log out from one and log into the other and still have my same character. I'm even more interested in, if I've got my Minecraft server and stuff, I'm interested in, like, being able to send things across to another server or have things going on in another server impact my server in some way like that. That's the kind of stuff that really excites me. I could see the same with a space sim kind of game where, you know, I've got my planet and my solar system or whatever else, and then I've got other people kind of coming in and out and doing business and everything else. It's a cool idea. I think that what I always struggle with is how do you implement something like that where it's not generic and where it's not feeling like really just kind of automatically generated stuff, because that's another thing with Space Sims. It's kind of the same problem I had with the original Elder Scrolls game, where it's just like there are hundreds of villages and you go to each one and they all look the exact same and they all have the same people and they all do the same stuff. It's like, how do I create something that actually feels unique and actually tells some kind of story, even if it's just circumstantial and emergent?
Well, maybe like in a space game, the idea would be like you claim a solar system. If you're the first person to find it, you can claim it, and then you could start building your own stations. You could start building your own colonies and make the system yours. So you could, if you want to make it more of an industrial system, you could do that. If you want to make it more of a luxury system, you could do that. And that way you could leave your mark on this. And then I don't know if you call it the mayor of the solar system, but
the problem that I find in space games like that is whenever you go to a planet or a star base or whatever, and it doesn't let you get out of the ship, right? So, and I understand why, because it's a space game, not a walking around on a space station game.
Oh,
but
I wish more games let you do that.
Well, it's like you pull up and what is this star system versus the other ones? Well, this one, if I open up the commodity list, right? They buy this high and sell that low. Mm-hmm. And then this is available in the store. And that's really the only differentiator. Really.
I will say that is one thing I think Freelancer did right with the different themes to its different regions. Like you had the British region, and you had the German region, and you had the Japanese region. I think that even adding that kind of flavor, if there's not much else, I think that just that can add something to the feel of a space game.
I think so, yeah, because I do agree that when you go to a planet and basically it's just a commodities list.
Exactly.
Buy low, sell high.
Or an equipment list or a ship list. You
like
know?
I eject, yeah. You know, like I would rather, you know, even as simple as a concept as it was, I would rather have something that's evocative like Homeworld before I'd rather have a different commodity list because I'm in a different part of the galaxy and that's it. Like Homeworld like had a sense of style. Like it had a sense
it really
of place.
It really did.
You know, it really, there was weight to it. And in a lot of these games, there just isn't. It kind of leads me to despair a little bit. I mean, I just bought a T-Flight HOTAS X Thrustmaster. I've got
with
a joystick and a little HOTAS. It's not that fancy. It's like $40. Like it's not a $200 kit, but it is like it does have a separate throttle and it's got the stick. And mm-hmm. for playing War Thunder, it's fine. Like it covers what I need, but it's
What is War Thunder?
War Thunder is a free-to-play flight sim game that takes place in World War II from the same guys who did World of Tanks.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry, but that was the second time you mentioned it. So I was curious.
Yeah, I know. It's worth looking into, actually.
That's not World of Tanks. It's Gaijin that made this one. So, World of Warplanes is going to be the one from the World of Tanks guys. But this is Gaijin, who is the guys.
World of Warplanes. See, I get the two mixed up sometimes because I thought maybe they'd renamed one for the other. I couldn't.
But are you having fun with that? Because I looked at some videos of it and it just like made my jaw drop, you know. But
yeah.
Then I looked and it's like, oh, well, you can fly it with the mouse and everything. And I'm like,
Yeah. And you're kind of turning your nose up on it. Well, that's kind of the cool thing about it is that you can play with the mouse and stuff, but you can play on realistic settings. Mm. Like there's different types of settings, right? There's arcade mode, there's realism mode, and you can play in matches that limit you to one or the other. You play in realism mode, you don't have to use a flight stick. And some people say, you know what, keyboard works pretty good. And to be fair, 1942 Pacific Air War, one of my favorite games of all time.
Oh, yes. If I was in the same room, I'd give you a fist bump right now. That's one of my favorite World War II sims. I played the...
When I was 12 or 13, we stayed at a cabin for 2 weeks at a beach, and the guy who owned the cabin had a laptop. He was a nerd, right? He's a tech guy, so he had a laptop, and he had this game on it, and I never played it before, and I could never play it since, but I played the hell out of it. I could play it. I played that with a keyboard on a laptop, and I was perfectly satisfied. So some people say with War Thunder, it works great with a keyboard and mouse, but I do have my flight stick, and I like it. So it's like I want to take this thing out for a spin in space, and so far my best option seems to be going to, you know, good old games.
No, this reminds me. If you liked 1942, this just reminded me. There's a game called Star Shatter that came out several years ago. It just went open source, so it's free to play. It's kind of Falcon 4-ish, but in space.
Okay.
Basically, you can be a fighter pilot or a bomber pilot in a dynamic campaign, but you can raise in rank and eventually command capital ships. You can actually, using a map, create sorties and things like that. And it's got totally, you can have an arcade flight mode or you can have the realistic Newtonian flight mode.
Is this from Matrix Games?
It was.
Came out around 2006.
The last one was called The Gathering Storm.
Got it, yeah.
I believe. You can get it for free now.
Yeah, and here's the funny part. The first three hits in Google, Star Shatter, item, World of Warcraft.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Star Shatter is an item in World of Warcraft.
Oh, God.
It's like a big mace, as I remember.
Oh, jeez.
See, he knows.
Oh, Jesus. But no, that might be a good fit for you.
Because what I'm looking at, like, you know, I don't even know if I played a lot of Freelancer 2 back in the day. Like, I don't know if I played the original, or Free Space, sorry, I'm thinking Free Space 2. So it's like Free Space 2 is on Good Old Games for $10. So
yeah, and if you don't have it, do it.
It's worth it.
Just do it.
Yeah, and then there's looks like there's even little mods out for it and stuff.
There is a full blown. It's called the Free Space Open Project because they released the source code several years ago, and these folks have updated the graphics, updated the sound. Even though it still runs like butter, it looks...
Yeah, pretty much when you install that thing and then you install the, like, what is it, 2 gigs worth of patch that's on top of
it's, it's amazing.
The game looks like you went to the store and bought it off the shelf today.
Yeah.
Really?
It's that's that modernized.
No, they
additionally,
and they're still updating.
Out,
they're still updating it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you should check out. Are you a Battlestar Galactica fan?
I watched the series. Yep.
Okay, so they managed somehow to take the Free Space 2 engine and put that pseudo Newtonian feel on it, and they very well captured the look and feel of the Battlestar Galactica show.
Yeah.
Oh, neat.
This mod, Diaspora, and then there was one that they made, which like 10 years in the making. It's a Wing Commander mod.
Wing Commander Saga, The Darkest Dawn.
Yeah, and it is better than the Wing Commander games.
Yeah.
Than,
wow.
It is at least double as good as the original content.
Yeah, Free Space 2, it not only has one of the best stories in space gaming, it's got the best HUD, it's got the best combat, it's got... There are some times where you're just... There are times in that game I almost shit my pants. Because there's one point where you just hear dive, 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 hit your burners, pilot, and I nearly shit my pants, and I just dove and hit my burners before crashing into something. But if you don't own that game, if you never play it, that'll definitely give your joystick a run for its money. But I do know a lot of people who have loved playing that game with a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, well, no, I'll play with a joystick for sure. You know, like that is one of those games, like, you know, people kind of look down their nose at you if you didn't use a joystick. Like I do remember that.
I mean, yeah, I know people that do that, but no, you enjoy the game however you want, as long as you enjoy it. That's my motto.
Sure. Well, that's fair. So, okay, so again, what's this Free Space 2 mod called? Like, just the conversion one, or just the, like, the graphical update
It's called Free Space Open. It's called the Free Space Open Project. You can get it at hardlight.net.
Okay.
I believe.
There will be a link in the show
notes. Yeah, I'm going to put all these in the show notes so you can find them if you want to visit the podcast once it goes live. But that is a game. There are not only a ton of mods for it, but they're also like the free total conversions that we're mentioning, Diaspora, Wing Commander. It's just amazing stuff. Definitely worth the $10. Soundtrack is also great. And it really is the pinnacle of the genre. The problem was it helped kill the genre because it sold so few copies back in the day.
Yeah, and that's really a shame. You know, I hate it when any genre kind of ends up in the weeds and doesn't get a chance to continue to grow. So I've been saying for the last, I'd say, 4 years that really I think it's the space sim genre that's really due at this point. So I'm hoping that something kind of breaks through, because you've rattled off like names of games like I've never even heard of, and not to be too, you know, arrogant or weird about it, but I tend to hear about most things at some point just by virtue of, you know, the gamers jobs community, and, you know, good stuff tends to float to the top. But there's stuff you're mentioning that I've never even heard of. Like this genre is just so far.
Oh, there's a great thread on Gamers with Jobs. It's the strategy. It's the Space Sim strategy thread. It's several pages long, but that's all we talk about is this stuff.
Yeah. No, I've been keeping tabs on it, but, you know, my eyes kind of gloss over after a while because they can start to, you know, look kind of samey, you know, like
it can be kind of a tough
thing to dive into. But, you know, going back to like Freelancer, you know, going back to those older games and
I would recommend I would go back to TIE Fighter. Seriously.
See, I don't know. I don't know if I can go that far.
I would just at least try it.
Could you even make that work on Windows 7?
Yeah.
It's absolutely great.
Yeah.
Smooth like butter.
Runs on DOSBox. Runs beautifully.
Man, I don't know. I'll think about it. I'll look into it.
If you want to watch on my site, Space Game Junkie, there are several videos of me playing it if you want to get an idea of how it looks and how it plays.
I'll do that. See, it'll be like Dwarf Fortress again. Like, I'll just be happy to watch you play it.
Okay.
And kind of, like, appreciate it. But
Is nothing like playing it, though, because the story is absolutely fantastic. I mean, you really feel for the Empire. Like, when it first came out, I'm like, I'm playing the Empire. How could I really feel for the Empire? But the way it's constructed, you're like, oh, the Empire's not so bad. They're trying to, you know, build order in the galaxy. They're not that bad a bunch of folk.
So you're actually buying into the propaganda.
Yeah, damn you, scummy rebels. You're trying to ruin our beautiful plan here. Seriously, you get totally on board with being in the Empire because it's that good. I was shocked at how much on board I became with the Empire.
Yeah.
It's that good.
So there was TIE Fighter, and then there's X-Wing, right?
X-Wing came before it. It's not as good. It's okay. It's more puzzly, and at times a bit more difficult.
Okay, and then there's X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, which is, I want to say, a really kind of rudimentary online
mode? That was basically a multiplayer versus set up deathmatch and capture the flag type thing, but with space fighters, it was not that great. Don't even bother with X-Wing Alliance, seriously. Sure, you get to fly the Millennium Falcon, but it's nowhere near as great as you might think it is. It's nowhere even near as good.
Yeah, you got to nail the Millennium Falcon if you're going to bring it
it's
up.
It's as boring as driving a bus, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so the TIE Fighter is really the pinnacle of those Star Wars sims. So just even watch the video, but just playing the game and hearing those lasers and feeling yourself in this little unshielded craft where one shot can take you out, and you're like, oh my God. Yeah, it gets crazy. But that's a fun.
Well, you know what? I'm convinced. I'll do my best I'll give it a shot.
And if it doesn't click with you, it doesn't click with you. You know, that's totally fair. You know, these games aren't for everyone. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, LucasArts isn't even around anymore, so it's not like they're gonna come after me or anything.
Just twist it a little bit. No, at first I was really upset about it, but we had a podcast talking about it last week, and when I saw what their last game was, Kinect Star Wars, I came around to the point that it was a mercy killing because...
Yeah, you know, it's like, don't cry for me, I'm already dead. The LucasArts has been gone for a long time. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really sad because I try to remember the good times. You know, there were so many good times, but not anymore. But yeah, there are a lot of games that are even coming out. Like one I was trying to remember earlier is called Skyjacker, which they're trying to term as GTA in space, which looks fun. That's made by a bunch of Russians. And let me just say, thank God for the Russians.
Kept it alive for years.
Yeah, during those last 10 years, it was those Eastern European folks that were keeping us going.
Oh, yeah, and that's always the case. Like, those guys will always be cranking away at something everybody else has forgotten about until it's ready to come back into the light. Yeah, for sure. I love Eastern European games. I love how janky and kind of buggy and weird. And like, they're just so imaginative. Like, Space Rangers 2.
I was going to ask if you had played that one. Yeah, that's it.
Space Rangers 2, I really tried. It was one of the last games that used that really awful DRM. Star Force. Yeah, it was like one of the last few Star Force games. So it's got some really heinous DRM attached to it.
Well, you know,
the game itself is so crazy.
You know, it was sad. They were selling it on Good Old Games for a while, and then it disappeared from everywhere. You can't buy it. You can't buy it right now because they're about to release an HD version.
Oh, that's cool. I'm glad they're still kicking away at it.
Yeah, and apparently you can play as pirates as well in that game, which some people probably will like.
Okay. I would say, you know, the last thing I'll leave with you guys, my recommendation to keep an eye out for, is when I was at PAX East, I got a chance to check out Bootsnake Games. They're an indie outfit. They're working on a game. They're just calling the Bootsnake Games prototype right now.
Mm-hmm.
It is a mix of FTL and XCOM.
Whoa. I heard you talking about this on one of the previous podcasts.
Like it's like basically... It gives you a top-down kind of Drox operative view of a galaxy map with, you know, like ships flying around. You've got your ship, and that's all in real time. And then when you collide, like if you decide to attack another ship, then you go into XCOM, like modern XCOM style turn-based combat. And they're talking about modeling so that when your ship, you know, boards another ship, it'll actually model your ship's layout and their ship's layout, and that's what you'll fight in.
Oh, God.
And you'll be able to build rooms on your ship and set up like the armory where the guns are, or like defensive pods or things like that. So they're talking about doing all this amazing stuff, and they're just in prototype.
So you're tickling,
nuts.
You're tickling Brian in his rules of engagement spot right now because
but
they
also give me an anxiety attack because that's what FTL does. Every time I play it, I get an anxiety.
Oh, I know. I love FTL.
Did you ever play those games, the rules of engagement games?
No, I have no idea what that is.
Okay.
I thought that was a really bad 80s action.
Well, it was basically, they came out with there was a game that was Rules of Engagement, and it was kind of like a Starship Tactical Command thing. But that game, they sold another game that was Breach. And Breach, if you had it installed, when you would go and do, like, Marines board another ship, it would kick over into the Breach game, and you would actually play out the combat.
And it played kind of
like...
Cool. I like
Yeah, and Breach. It played kind of like XCOM.
Jagged Alliance a little bit-ish.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Space Hulk. So
that's great stuff. But yeah, if
speaking of new Space Hulk coming.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I bought the last time they released Space Hulk, like the board game. I bought a copy with a friend, all $150, whatever that was. But man, is it ever fun!
I've never played the board game. I only played the computer version from the 90s. I played the hell out of it.
The board game is brilliant. Beer and pretzels. I got some buddies over that want to play a game, but you know. It's like, you know, we don't want to get into a full-on tabletop game.
You be the Marines, I'll be the aliens, and then you switch sides and see if the other person can run it better. And it's a great time, great game. And the PC version that they've announced looks like they're really just trying to port the board game. They're not trying to do anything too crazy with it. So it could end up working out really well.
I went to this con where this guy had built some kind of stuff. It looked almost like a circuit breadboard. But it was from a craft store, so it's some kind of like macrame or some plastic grid, right? But it looks great, like a floor grid. Okay, so he took like some kind of foam core board and he built not the ceiling but the two walls and the floor, and then he put this this plastic grid on the floor and painted it, you know, so it looked like the gridding floor inside of Space Hulk, and you know, he had just a massive table layout of this thing. But that was the last time I played Space Hulk, was on this like super pro home built like 3D thing. Nice. There was none of that BS of like interlocking your little cardboard maps. This thing was like full on. Yeah, he backed like a pickup truck up to the door to unload his Space Hulk game. Oh, so he was pretty hardcore about it.
Well,
but,
Sean, I hope we've given you a lot of food to gorge yourself.
You've given me lots.
Because I was hoping we would give you something that might twinge your appetite for space games. So I'm quite excited that you're going to try some of this stuff. So.
Well, I'll track down the thread in Gamers with Jobs, and I'll visit your wonderful website, and I'll let you know. Like I'm going to take a real true and honest run at some of these games and see if I can find some of that old love, some of that old charm, you know, like some of that. Something to kind of remind me what it's all about, because I'm tired of chasing dots. I don't like dismissing entire genres because they haven't been doing well lately. It feels like kind of a mean thing to do to a venerable game type.
And I didn't bring you on to get that kind of apology, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
Well, I mean, you guys are kind of the last bastion. Like, you guys basically represent the genre, right? Like, you're basically the spokesman for the space sim.
Trying.
Yeah. You're the last ember keeping it alive until Chris Roberts can launch his Kickstarter game.
I hope so. But it's been a pleasure having you on. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us this late, probably late for you. What time zone are you in?
Oh, it's just 10:30. I'm central. It's fine.
Okay, that's not too bad. But it feels late.
But thank you very much. It's really been fun talking about this stuff, and I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks, man. Have a great night.